News.
At your service, it's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, guys, here we go. Hour two of the KMOX Home Improvement Show. Want to welcome in the 97.1 listeners to the show. You guys can find me the same spot as all the KMOX listeners can find me, 314-436-7900. We lost Steve through the break, but Carla came in. So let's get to our friend Carla and see what's going on. Are you there, Carla?
I am.
Awesome, awesome. What do you have happening for us?
Well, I was trying to get a new screen door installed, and I went to one of the big box stores, and they came out, had an installer come out, and basically they said they wouldn't give a bid on it because the door frame, the outer door frame is out of plumb or something like that.
Sure.
And I was wondering, is there any way to fix that? They didn't tell me anything. They just said they couldn't do it. Is there a way to fix that without getting a brand new entry door?
Well, so it will depend a little bit on the entry door that you have and if it's in good enough condition to kind of rework, because it would basically be taking out the door that you have, frame and all, and reinstalling it so that it's level plumb square and will work really well. So the door has to be in good enough condition to be able to do that. But you can basically take off the trim, take out all the screws, kind of uninstall that door, level it out, shim it where you need, and then reinstall it. And then that would leave you a squared trim opening for that new screen door. But yes, I see their dilemma, because if it's really out of whack, they'll never get the new screen door to operate properly.
Wow. So that's like a whole new rebuild.
Yeah, and the problem that comes in is really the time that it takes to do that, and labor is expensive today in trying to accomplish something like that. So the time that it takes to do that is about the same amount of time, maybe even more time than it would take to rip that door out and put a new, brand new door in. And your the investment difference is going to be the new door hardware, if you need to paint it, things like that. So, but the real investment difference is, generally speaking, the cost of the door unit itself. And that's why more people end up going to getting a new door and new screen door at the same time, because just going through all that effort to keep the same door can be kind of cumbersome.
Wow. I get it. Okay. I was wondering if there were an alternative, and it seems that those two are the only thing that will work. So,
yep.
Okay. Well, I see where my issue is now. So,
okay. Perfect. Great, great question. Glad I could help, Carla. And for everybody out there, that's why, you know, a lot of the things like that happening with the doors and trying to correct them, these are great DIY projects if you have the wherewithal to handle it and can watch enough videos or ask enough people like myself and understand and learn and get through it, because your time is more a labor of love than an expense. So if there's things like that you could do yourself, that's why a lot of people see, well, my neighbor totally fixed his door and then it worked. But if he spent 20 hours doing that, when you get a really great company, that can be very expensive for a carpenter to do all that work. And that's the big difference between who are you getting to do work and how do you invest in it or not. And if you're doing it yourself, you're investing more time than actual money, which is great if you can. That's why people do it, and that's why we're here to help, because if you can't do it yourself, or you don't have a friend or a family member that can help you do it yourself, then you got to find somebody that's good and qualified and won't let you down. And that can be a very interesting thing to try and do. And a lot of people can have some issues with that. And you really don't know when someone does work for you, sometimes if it is good work or not. I mean, if it's not what you do, then how would you really know? So looking at the plumbing stack and they say, yeah, we sealed it up. Well, that could be a very inexpensive kind of Band-Aid that doesn't last very long. And that's why I asked about the type of roofs too, because if you're on a flat roof, a rubber TPO roof, then sealing is probably the actual answer. So understanding exactly what the whole scenario is very important. But when you get into that, and when you think about sealing something up, or you think about caulk, when caulking was even invented, I think caulking came out for like a construction residential type use in like the 1920s. I think the caulking gun was actually invented right about the turn of the century, when they first started even having products like that. So when they built a house in 1880, there was no caulk. How did they keep water out? How did they manage all of this? Well, they did, if you think about it, and how you lap the things and how you flash the things. So if you look at how like Mosby Building Arts is going to side your home, I can strip your home from siding, I can wrap it, I can flash it, I can do all these steps in the construction process prior to the siding going on. So when I put on vinyl siding, the caulking, there's spots you don't want to caulk because you don't want to trap water where you don't want it. And there's other spots you might want to caulk, but it's more of an aesthetic look, make it look better. I can side the whole house without any caulk whatsoever, and you won't have a leak if it's installed and performed absolutely properly underneath that siding product. So the way it's handled, the caulk now should be more of an aesthetically pleasing, or if it's a fiber cement type or a wood, you're caulking so that you can paint so that the joints look good, and you're not necessarily caulking to keep the house dry. You're caulking to make it look aesthetically pleasing. So when the caulk fails, you're okay, and you still, to get it looking good again, you're going to want to re-caulk, paint, do things to it. But you're not caulking that home to keep water out. If you are, then there's probably a deeper thing going on. So if you have anything like that going on, you have anything that you've had done, questions, comments, honey-do lists you're trying to take care of, you can find me right here. We got three more segments coming up. So 314-436-7900 is how you can find me. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back. A lot of great stuff going on. So, again, you have any stories, conversations, questions, anything you need, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me, and we've got Bob on the line. So let's grab Bob and see what's going on. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, sir?
Great, just staying out of the. It isn't raining, or it's kind of like off and on. So I'm kind of inside.
Yep. I've been watching it. It's rained like three different times since I got in here. So, yeah.
You can't make up its mind, can it?
Nope. So what's happening?
I have a small detached garage deck needing to be rebuilt. And the ledger board, right now it's not connected, but it needs to, there's a concrete foundation, and I want to connect it, the ledger board, to the concrete foundation. And I guess what I'm hoping for is your expert experienced opinion of what would be better to use, a wedge, because I realize you have to, hammer drill in and everything, a wedge type anchor or a concrete screw type anchor, and what diameter and length you'd suggest.
Yeah, so they make some really, really good like wedge type anchors that you can drill right in, kind of put the nut on them, hammer in, and then tighten that nut. There's some good ones that will work really, really well. It will, the size and everything is hard to speak of. Obviously, the bigger the better, but they're going to hold so much weight, and there's a little engineering to figure out what structure you're building. How big is it, and how much does it weigh, and how much force does it have trying to pull away from that foundation? And that is more what's going to answer the actual anchor. It's going to be like a half inch or a 5/8 inch size kind of wedge anchor, and they make ones that, like I said, you just drill right through everything into the concrete, and you just hammer them in there, and they'll work really well. But you really need some engineering on the deck itself to say, this is how big it is, this is what it's made of, this is what it's going into, and then they can say, yes, use this size anchor bolt of this type to make it hold. So you might... What I would recommend is just getting with a structural engineer and seeing if they can just come out, look at the deck, and then they can write you like a quick little report. It might cost you $300, $500, $600, $700, something like that, for something quick and easy from them, but it'll get you to a really good, strong answer.
Okay.
But for any deck, I wouldn't go... For any deck, I wouldn't go under like a half inch. It's going to be that or above for almost any deck.
Is there a standard length, or that differs too based on the...
That would differ too on if the foundation's 8 inches thick, go in this far, and it's going to hold this much pressure pulling away, and weight, the shear force weight of trying to chop this thing off is the other thing that they're after, is just because it's weight on each and every one of those bolts. So they'll look and say, yep, put one every foot or every 16 inches or however often they say, and use this size, and then it would work out.
Because right now it's kind of a standalone, and then I thought I'd make it stronger to, attach it, but I guess I need to... But I could take those supports off, I guess, if I attach it right. Or
yeah, and if it's standalone and it's got posts and things near the foundation holding it up, attaching it to the foundation might make it a little seem more stable, but I doubt it's going to make it really stronger, because if your post and your piers are good holding that thing up standing alone, it's going to be strong the way it is. It's just... You kind of lose the sway or the movement if it's attached to that foundation.
You think there's any advantage to attaching it to the foundation, or
not really? If you can stabilize it and not have a lot of sway to it and everything not attached, you're perfectly fine. And there's no literal reason. The reason we attach it to the foundation is so that we don't have to pour more piers and put more posts in to hold it up near the foundation.
Yeah.
So it's less digging, less concrete, less post. It usually is less of an investment to attach it to the foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of digging. It's easier to drill than dig, I guess.
Yep. yeah, and it's all about labor these days.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that's
less time.
And getting, you know, people are busy and, you know.
Sure.
Okay, well, I guess they had it good with that way. I just was looking at, you know, doing it that way. But I guess you also got, when you consider it to the house, then it's kind of becoming part of the house. And
yes, it is. And you got to think about, well, if you're lower down the foundation, you're not too bad. But you do, when you're up against the house and attached to the house, you got to think about how it's up against the house and water coming down the wall and getting between the band board and the house or the foundation. And that's a lot of things happen to decks is because the water gets down between that band board. It rots that band board. It rusts out the fasteners. If they don't use the right fasteners, they can rust away. And that's why a lot of decks separate from the house and actually fall or collapse because of how they were attached to the house and or flashing wasn't thought about to keep water going where we want it to go so it doesn't shorten the life expectancy. So you really could be better off with that thing separate than being attached if it already is, especially. So
you can still flash it, but just...
Yeah.
But then you don't have to worry about...
Or you just leave a small space and let the water run right through and let it go down to the bottom of the foundation where it would have been going without a deck anyways, and you're perfectly fine. So, I hope that helps, Bob. I know it's a lot of different information to think about, but yeah, a lot going on as we build decks and do that. So let's jump to Marty real quick and see what's happening there. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, thanks for calling.
I have a brick garage, a two-car garage with the doors surrounded by wooden trim. So where the wooden trim meets the brick, there's a pretty good-sized crack that runs all the way down to the ground where the brick and the wood meet.
Uh-huh.
The kind of caulk that would seal that.
Yeah, is the trim painted?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just want a typical exterior grade paintable caulk, just a latex type paintable caulk that's made for outside, and you just got to be careful how much you get on the brick. If you're good at it, kind of keep less on the brick, more in between the brick and the trim and on the trim, and then you can paint it up and it'll look real nice. But yeah, that stuff just kind of wears out and just kind of cracks and goes away over time. So that's all you need. You definitely do not want any type of silicone or any type of caulk that paint will not stick to.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hey, bye. Yeah, awesome. Not a problem at all. Some great comments, some great questions. We're going to get into our middle hour break here. If Tony can hold on through this break, we will get to your call as soon as we return. All right, guys, we are back. The Home Improvement Radio Show. Rich Orr is here for you. God, tons of great conversations happening, great questions. Absolutely having a blast today. I appreciate all the great thoughts and questions and calls in. And again, you can find me 314-436-7900. Let's get Tony on the line. He's been waiting through the break. I appreciate that. Tony, what do you got going on?
Good afternoon now, Rich.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I've got a question. I used to be an independent painting and drywall contractor.
Okay.
And so, you know, typically every job when I wrote a bid was, you know, dependent upon what the situation was. So I have somebody who actually is a friend of mine. I did an exterior paint job, but I did some replacement of some wood siding. Now, I went through everything you're supposed to do. I primed the wood, I painted it, I put two coats on, and now 4 years later, they're coming back to me saying, well, you need to fix this. Typically, everything that I always told people was, it's guaranteed for a year, mm-hmm. especially on exterior. What are your thoughts on that, Rich?
Well, so it definitely depends on how it's done, and you really got to look into the circumstances of why is something going wrong with it. And I explain this to people all the time too with what we do, because we have a 10-year workmanship warranty, but there's a difference between workmanship and between like a product warranty, what that particular product is. And it's hard when you're looking at a product that's a piece of wood. But if there's a reason that something's happening that's causing stuff to go bad, and I've seen it before in the past with paint bubbling because of things that have other layers of paint or moisture coming out from the wood that you're painting on, and that is something that's very hard to control. And it doesn't mean that you installed the paint or the primer or the product wrong. It just means that there's a circumstance that's making it happen. So that's a tough area to kind of have a conversation about and determine. Now, one thing that I do try and do when I've repaired wood siding and different trim pieces outside or whatever is to actually prime all six sides of the piece of wood. And that's kind of a, you'll probably know, that's kind of an extra go-ahead step of trying to really make it the best it can possibly be. But if
it is, but it was lap siding, so
yeah.
I went everywhere but the backside.
Yeah. And so if there's moisture, vapor trying to exit the wall from inside the wall, behind the wall, behind the siding, then it's coming in through the siding, and it's not like you made that happen or a particular person putting on the piece of siding made that happen. It's just a circumstance of the house that can be hard to explain to a client that sees failure. Yeah.
Rich, I can tell you this. It's a north side,
yeah, yeah,
which is always a problem.
Yep.
And it's wooded and shaded.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, that is difficult. That's a difficult spot for sure. Yeah. More will go wrong there, absolutely, than elsewhere or the south side.
Well, and I painted the primed. Well, I didn't prime the entire house, but the spots that we repaired and put new siding up, of course, I primed those, and I primed them on the lips and everything else. I didn't do the backside, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
But everything was due diligence-wise. It was, this is what I know to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, yeah. And for everyone out there, understand that 99% of people, installers, siders, painters are not going to prime the backside of a board. It's not, it's atypical to actually prime the backside. So I've done it on repairs and things where I'm looking at it going, well, I'm going to try and prevent and predict something that may or may not happen. So it's slightly overboard, but better. So it is normal, and there is typical ways that we do things, and most people do not prime the backside of something when they're installing it up against a wall or whatever, because you just, not a lot of moisture should be getting to there. But yeah, that's the things that can happen. So, and that's why I also tell everybody, and I'm used to telling this to people that are having work done, but also looking at it from the company's side or my side or your side or the contractor's side is have it in writing or get it in writing. If there's a 10-year workmanship warranty and that's in writing, or if there's a 1-year workmanship warranty and that's in writing, then that's just the warranty. So really 4 years later, there's not much that could happen anyways, because if everything was signed and in writing and was understood, there's a 12-month workmanship warranty on this stuff lasting and working, and that I put it in correctly, then you're four times longer than that anyways. They just need to get their stuff fixed.
Well, and absolutely, and that was my point to call you, was it's a peace of mind.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's just, you know, I didn't give you a 10-year warranty. I gave you a 12-month warranty. If it fails,
yeah,
if there's a problem, I will fix it. Otherwise, you know, now I've got somebody that's said, well, it's 4 years later. Well, okay. I understand you're upset, but, you know, I can't continue to come back to your house when you have issues.
Oh, yeah, and I've definitely, and even here at Mosby Building Arts with what I do, we have certain projects, certain installs, or certain situations with houses that we will educate people on what's going on, let them make the educated decision. So there, for instance, there may be a better way to do something, but of course there's a lot more expense in that. The better way gets you a 10-year workmanship warranty. If you don't want the better way, I'll change my warranty. I'll do it because it is a normal, typical thing to do. I'll educate you on what might happen, and I'll change our warranty back down to 1 year, knowing that if something's happening 4, 5, 6 years from now, I didn't do everything I was hoping to do to prevent that, and we might be back into something 5 or 6 years down the road. So that's something that we do also. So, hey, I appreciate the call, the question, Tony. I think it's a great subject matter that people really, really need to be aware of. I got to jump over to Richard here and see what's going on with him. But, hey, appreciate it. Great conversation. And let's get on to here to Richard. Hey, are you there, Richard?
I am.
Awesome. What do you have for me?
Well, I hope I can describe this correctly. I have an old house in Webster, and I just discovered that the squirrels, unbeknownst to me, had gotten into a spot where a valley, I guess it's a valley joist, comes down, and they chewed off the end. They got in between, I guess, the fascia.
As we return. All right, guys, we are back. The Home Improvement Radio Show. Rich Orr is here for you. Got tons of great conversations happening, great questions. Absolutely having a blast today. I appreciate all the great thoughts and questions and calls in. And again, you can find me 314-436-7900. Let's get Tony on the line. He's been waiting through the break. I appreciate that. Tony, what do you got going on?
Good afternoon now, Rich.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Good. I've got a question. I used to be an independent painting and drywall contractor.
Okay.
And so, you know, typically every job when I wrote a bid was, you know, dependent upon what the situation was. So I have somebody who actually is a friend of mine. I did an exterior paint job, but I did some replacement of some wood siding. Now, I went through everything you're supposed to do. I primed the wood, I painted it, I put two coats on, and now 4 years later, they're coming back to me saying, well, you need to fix this. Typically, everything that I always told people was, it's guaranteed for a year. Mm-hmm. Especially on exterior. What are your thoughts on that, Rich?
Well, so it definitely depends on how it's done. And you really got to look into the circumstances of why is something going wrong with it. And I explain this to people all the time too with what we do, because we have a 10-year workmanship warranty, but there's a difference between workmanship and between like a product warranty, what that particular product is. And it's hard when you're looking at a product that's a piece of wood. But if there's a reason that something's happening that's causing stuff to go bad, and I've seen it before in the past with paint bubbling because of things that have other layers of paint or moisture coming out from the wood that you're painting on, and that is something that's very hard to control. And it doesn't mean that you installed the paint or the primer or the product wrong. It just means that there's a circumstance that's making it happen. So that's a tough area to kind of have a conversation about and determine. Now, one thing that I do try and do when I've repaired wood siding and different trim pieces outside or whatever is to actually prime all six sides of the piece of wood. And that's kind of a, you'll probably know, that's kind of an extra go-ahead step of trying to really make it the best it can possibly be. But if
it is, but it was lap siding, so
yeah,
I went everywhere but the backside.
Yeah, and so if there's moisture, vapor trying to exit the wall from inside the wall, behind the siding, then it's coming in through the siding, and it's not like you made that happen or a particular person putting on the piece of siding made that happen. It's just a circumstance of the house that can be hard to explain to a client that sees failure. Yeah.
Rich, I can tell you this. It's a north side.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is always a problem.
Yep.
And it's wooded and shaded.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, that is difficult. That's a difficult spot for sure. Yeah, more will go wrong there absolutely than elsewhere or the south side.
Well, and I painted the primed. Well, I didn't prime the entire house, but the spots that we repaired and put new siding up, of course, I primed those, and I primed them on the lips and everything else. I didn't do the backside, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
But everything was due diligence-wise. It was, this is what I know to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, yeah. And for everyone out there, understand that 99% of people, installers, siders, painters, are not going to prime the backside of a board. It's not. It's atypical to actually prime the backside. So I've done it on repairs and things where I'm looking at it, going, well, I'm going to try and prevent and predict something that may or may not happen. So it's slightly overboard, but better. So it is normal, and there is typical ways that we do things, and most people do not prime the backside of something when they're installing it up against a wall or whatever, because you just, not a lot of moisture should be getting to there. But yeah, that's the things that can happen. So, and that's why I also tell everybody, and I'm used to telling this to people that are having work done, but also looking at it from the company's side or my side or your side or the contractor's side, is have it in writing or get it in writing. If there's a 10-year workmanship warranty and that's in writing, or if there's a 1-year workmanship warranty and that's in writing, then that's just the warranty. So really 4 years later, there's not much that could happen anyways, because if everything was signed and in writing and was understood, there's a 12-month workmanship warranty on this stuff lasting and working, and that I put it in correctly, then you're four times longer than that anyways. They just need to get their stuff fixed.
Well, and absolutely, and that was my point to call you was it's a peace of mind.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's just, you know, I didn't give you a 10-year warranty. I gave you a 12-month warranty. If it fails,
yeah,
if there's a problem, I will fix it. Otherwise, you know, now I've got somebody that's said, well, it's 4 years later. Well, okay. I understand you're upset, but, you know, I can't continue to come back to your house when you have issues.
Oh, yeah, and I've definitely, and even here at Mosby Building Arts with what I do, we have certain projects, certain installs, or certain situations with houses that we will educate people on what's going on, let them make the educated decision. So, there, for instance, there may be a better way to do something, but, of course, there's a lot more expense in that. The better way gets you a 10-year workmanship warranty. If you don't want the better way, I'll change my warranty. I'll do it because it is a normal, typical thing to do. I'll educate you on what might happen, and I'll change our warranty back down to 1 year, knowing that if something's happening 4, 5, 6 years from now, I didn't do everything I was hoping to do to prevent that, and we might be back into something 5 or 6 years down the road. So that's something that we do also. So, hey, I appreciate the call, the question, Tony. I think it's a great subject matter that people really, really need to be aware of. I got to jump over to Richard here and see what's going on with him. But, hey, appreciate it. Great conversation. And let's get on to here to Richard. Hey, are you there, Richard?
I am.
Awesome. What do you have for me?
Well, I hope I can describe this correctly. I have an old house in Webster, and I just discovered that the squirrels, unbeknownst to me, had gotten into a spot at where a valley, I guess it's a valley joist,
uh-huh,
comes down, and they chewed off the end. They got in between, I guess, the fascia and the soffit, and it chewed in there. And then they chewed off part of the valley joist. Can I scab on each side of that in order to resecure the soffit and the fascia?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep. You should be able to scab onto both sides of that and kind of resecure everything. Yep.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to be a structural thing. There's really not that much weight.
Yeah.
On it at, you know, that area. But okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to
Just glue it, screw it, attach it well, and you should be perfectly fine. Boy, those squirrels are just a menace.
Boy, they are.
Yeah.
They are. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're very, very welcome. Great question. Something that a lot of people are up against, like I was talking about, the roof boots, the different types, the rubber, the lead boots, the newer kind that are painted galvanized that work really well. Squirrels won't eat. It's just amazing that I have seen squirrels, literally, I've seen them eat the roofing shingles, which I've seen them eat the lead pipe a lot, and everybody, the lead suite, they love that sort of thing. It attracts them to it. They're sharpening their teeth. I hear all these different things. I've seen them go right through the actual asphalt shingles before. And, of course, getting into your home through the wood, all of that, it just, what a hard thing to do. Something that we're constantly in our area having to battle. So there's good ways, better ways to do these things so that we don't have to look back at that again like those newer plumbing vent stack pipe covers that work really, really well. So, hey, we got one segment left. If you have something for me, feel free to jump in that next segment. 314-436-7900 is how you will get to me. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, guys, let's get right back at it. And last segment. So let's get to Paula and see how we can help. Paula, thanks for calling. What do you got going on?
Hi. Each year when the storms come in, we seem to have a problem with power outages out here. I live in St. Charles County.
Okay.
And we had we have no drains in our basement, so everything's supported by sump pumps.
Oh,
so when
okay.
the power goes out, we're pretty much stuck. So my brother suggested for our sump pumps that instead of using house power, we use a battery. We don't have a big enough pit to fit a separate second backup pump. But
okay.
I just wondered if that would be a viable alternative.
Well, if you won't fit a second pump, the battery, they're backup systems, and the battery right. will only last so long, and
okay.
it will only run for so long, and once the power is on, it recharges.
Okay.
So it uses the power to recharge and keep charge, and then when you lose power, that's when it kicks in, and so the battery backup is a backup system with a second sump pump, so that if the one that's on the electric stops working, as the water rises, it'll kick on the second one, and the battery will run it. But I even warn people that the battery backups are great right up until if there's a major outage where you're out for where we've seen in St. Louis City and really big bad storms, you're out for days. If there's no mm-hmm. power for 2 or 3 or 5 days, the battery may not even last that whole time.
That was my concern too,
yeah.
because if you get multiple storms one after another and you're not getting any power, then
yep.
I guess the other alternative is we're going to look at a generator as well. So
yeah, so you've got a generator, which is a great alternative. And if you're only concerned about a sump pump in the basement for getting rid of groundwater, there is also a backup system that runs off of water. So it's a water
oh,
supply
really?
Backup system. Now, if you're on a well, you got to be on city water, because if you're on a well, it's a pump and it needs power. And you wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, when you lose power and you're on a well, you lose water at the same time. But
yeah.
it runs off of city water. And what happens is, if it needs to run, it will use the water to run through it and kind of create the siphon that'll suck the water outside. So those are interesting systems that can be installed, and that would be probably less expensive than a generator. But
right.
but a home generator, you can power more of the home, so that might be more of an advantage to power the refrigerator, the kitchen, different
right.
areas while you do it. So maybe look into both, but they're both good viable answers for that sump pump.
And what was the system called? The water based
yeah it's
system?
It's just like a water based a water backup, like sump pump backup system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And plumbers okay. should know about that.
I guess that would be the next thing, would be who would you contact to do something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, the water backup would be a plumber.
Okay. Okay. Generator's going to be an electrician.
Yep. You yep. got it.
When you have a generator, though, and it's powered by, I'm guessing, natural gas,
uh-huh.
would you have to get another contractor in that would hook it up to the
electrical companies that put in the generators kind of do it as a system, and they can provide the gas line too as well. They'll have somebody that they work with that will
okay.
do that. Sometimes you might need to have the gas company show up and upgrade the gas line to the whole house, depending on the size of the line coming to the house. But
okay.
most of those electricians that put in generators kind of handle that whole service, because they know that people don't want to have to do something separate themselves,
right.
so they kind of
right.
handle the whole service. Stribeco can put in a generator for you and handle the whole service for you.
Stribeco, STRIBE?
Yep.
Okay.
STREIB.
Oh,
I think it is.
STREIB. Okay.
Yep.
and I don't know if you would know this or not, but do you know if generators installation require permitting in most places?
Yes, usually they yes they do. Yep, because they've got transfer switches and they got to worry about sending power backwards because of the power outage. So there's a lot
inverters,
to them.
Yeah.
So they absolutely would need permits for that.
Permitting. Okay.
You got it.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yep. Okay. You're welcome. Perfect. Let's jump to Tom real quick. See if we can get Tom in here in a couple minutes. Tom, what do you got?
Thank you for taking my call. Recently got a home down at the lake that they converted the garage. It's got a big carport, so they converted the garage into like another guest bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And they put carpet down on top of the concrete that was there. And there was a pad underneath it. Now, my next project down there is to remove that carpet and put like vinyl plank down. So my question to you are twofold. One, if I'm putting vinyl plank down, if that carpet is like glued to the concrete and I can't get it up, can I put a subfloor on top of that and then put the vinyl plank? And if I can't get it up, can I just put the vinyl plank right on top of the concrete if it's smooth enough?
So the subfloor thing, they do make these subfloor panels that have plastic underneath them that they kind of lock together. That could be a consideration. The biggest thing is if you ever get moisture is the hard part. So putting the vinyl plank right on the concrete is going to be your best bet if you can get the carpet up. But if it is glued down and you're having a problem, I would look for these. They're like subfloor squares, and the bottom side is plastic with some space, and you lock them together.
Are they 4x8?
No, they're smaller. They're more like 2x2. Yep,
okay, and that's what I was thinking.
Yep, and that would be what I would maybe consider if you couldn't get that off. Or if the glue's just so rough and you got it off, but it's just such a mess, then maybe doing something like that would work. But just something to control the moisture.
Don't put the wood subfloor like down like you would if you were like on your floor of your house.
I would not.
You've got joists and stuff.
Yep, exactly. Because you could, if you get moisture, you're going to rot it away, get mold, and a lot of things like that going on. So.
And you could have put the vinyl plank right on top of the carpet, could you? It's a real tight carpet. Could you put it on top of there or no?
That I don't know. If it's a free floating, I mean, technically, I think it would be possible, but I just don't know. It might be too cushiony and coming apart and having issues.
Yeah, and I haven't done it yet, so I'm thinking the carpet will come up, but I'm really worried about the padding underneath that might have been glued. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. I sure do, so... All right. Well, that's what I would look at. Hey, you're very, very welcome. I appreciate the call. I'm glad that we squeezed you in here right at the end and got some great information. Had a great time today. A lot of great calls, questions, conversations. Love them all. I'll talk to everybody next week for sure. Hey, I just want to remind everybody, be good to everybody and be good to your homes. And I will talk to you next week.